which was overlooked by the lodge. "Very well," he said. "We must employ heroic methods." Pushing his way into the copsewood, where he had hidden his motor bicycle, he unwound a length of twine from under the saddle and went to a place which he had noticed in the course of his exploration. At this place, which was situated far from the road, on the edge of a wood, a number of large trees, standing inside the park, overlapped the wall. Lupin fastened a stone to the end of the string, threw it up, and caught a thick branch, which he drew down to him and bestraddled. The branch, in recovering its position, raised him from the ground. He climbed over the wall, slipped down the tree, and sprang lightly on the grass. It was winter, and through the leafless boughs, across the undulating lawns, he could see the little Chateau de Maupertuis in the distance. Fearing lest he should be perceived, he concealed himself behind a clump of fir trees. From there, with the aid of a field glass, he studied the dark and melancholy front of the manor house. All the windows were closed, and, as it were, barricaded with solid shutters. The house might easily have been uninhabited. "By Jove," muttered Lupin, "it is not the liveliest of residences. I shall certainly not come here to end my days." But the clock struck three. One of the doors on the ground floor opened, and the figure of a woman appeared, a very slender figure, wrapped in a brown cloak. The woman walked up and down for a few minutes, and was at once surrounded by birds, to which she scattered crumbs of bread. Then she went down the stone steps that led to the middle lawn and skirted it, taking the path on the right. With his field glass, Lupin could distinctly see her coming in his direction. She was tall, fair-haired, graceful in appearance, and seemed to be quite a young girl. She walked with a sprightly step, looking at the pale December sun, and amusing herself by breaking the little dead twigs on the shrubs along the road. She had gone nearly two-thirds of the distance that separated her from Lupin, when there came a furious sound of barking, and a huge dog, a colossal Danish boarhound, sprang from a neighboring kennel and stood erect at the end of the chain by which it was fastened. The girl moved a little to one side, without paying further attention to what was doubtless a daily incident. The dog grew angrier than ever, standing on its legs and dragging at its collar, at the risk of strangling itself. 30 or 40 steps farther, yielding probably to an impulse of impatience, the girl turned round and made a gesture with her hand. The Great Dane gave a start of rage, retreated to the back of its kennel, and rushed out again, this time unfettered. The girl uttered a cry of mad terror. The dog was covering the space between them, trailing its broken chain behind it. She began to run with all her might, and screamed out desperately for help, but the dog came up with her in a few bounds. She fell, at once exhausted, giving herself up for lost. The animal was already upon her, almost touching her. At that exact moment, a shot rang out. The dog turned a complete somersault, recovered its feet, tore the ground, and then lay down, giving a number of hoarse, breathless howls, which ended in a dull moan and an indistinct gurgling. And that was all. "Dead," said Lupin, who had hastened up at once, prepared, if necessary, to fire his revolver a second time. The girl had risen and stood pale, still staggering. She looked in great surprise at this man whom she did not know, and who had saved her life, and she whispered,
"Thank you. I have had a great fright. You are in the nick of time. I thank you, monsieur."
Lupin took off his hat. "Allow me to introduce myself, mademoiselle. My name is Paul Dubreuil. But before entering into any explanations, I must ask for one moment." He stooped over the dog's dead body and examined the chain at the part where the brute's effort.